welcome to the Daytime Confidential podcast, brought to you by DaytimeConfidential.com. On today's show, we're discussing the top 10 ways to improve One Life to Live. This should be an interesting episode because for the past year, One Life to Live has been on fire, but in recent months, it's been slipping a little. And so it's going to be an interesting discussion. We would encourage you to listen, so stay tuned. I hate to say it over again and restate myself, but this is going to be an interesting discussion. I have to say, of all the episodes, even of Days of Our Lives, this is probably the episode that scares me the most, for the simple fact that for the last year, we have heralded what Ron has done on One Life to Live. And unfortunately, in the past few weeks or in the past month or so, things have just started to fall apart. And in some respects, at least in my opinion. And so it will be interesting to see how this discussion goes based on what we're watching on our screens today, as opposed to even 3 months ago. Joining me today, I have Jamie. Welcome.
Hey.
And also joining me, we have Tina. Welcome.
Hello.
And joining us from Canada, TV Guide Canada's Nelson Branco. Welcome.
Hey, bitches.
This is going to be an episode, I have a feeling, and I'm actually scared to have this discussion. I'm honestly scared to have this discussion because I don't want people to think that even though we may say harsh things about One Life to Live, it doesn't negate the past year that we've had. Because
and
the
now
past
that we've finished with our public service announcement.
I know, but still, I'm just
it, you know, I know what he's saying.
Because it's one thing. We have said on the blog and on this podcast how great Ron was over the past year. And I still think that it's possible to do that kind of stuff. But I don't want people to think that just because we may be critical of some of the things that are going on now doesn't mean or doesn't detract from the improvements that One Life to Live has made over the past year.
It's tough love. I mean, if you love something unconditionally, you need to, you know, have some intervention time, and this is it.
In getting this discussion off the ground, let's discuss the core of One Life to Live. I believe Jamie may be the newest viewer among us, or else I am, one of the two. I'm not sure. Jamie, how long have you been watching One Life to Live?
Well, consistently for about 4 years, but I've, you know, seen it over the years, you know, whenever my shows would be on hiatus for the Olympics or something like that. And I had my aunts watch, so I knew the big parts. And, of course, I followed it in the soap mags. But I've only actually watched it consistently since about 2004.
Okay. Well, I've watched it for 10 years. Tina, how long have you been watching?
Late 70s.
Late 70s. And Nelson, I know you told us at the 40th anniversary episode that you grew up on it.
Yeah, mid-80s, but I read all the novels, and so I'm pretty, you know, I read the entire Bible of the show.
Okay.
But watched it mid-80s.
Tina, what do you consider to be the core of One Life to Live currently, and where should it be?
The core of One Life to Live has shifted. A lot of the, you know, out of all the original families and what have you, there's not a lot of them left. At this point, The truest of core characters that's left is Vicky. In my book, you know, the Lords, and after that Dorian, they're kind of the core. The Buchanans came in a little bit later. They've become a core family, basically due to marrying into the Lord family and you know, interactions and whatnot. So they're primarily the core of the show, in my book.
And do you think that One Life to Live as it is today has a solid core, or do you think it needs to be refocused?
It has moments of brilliance in a pile of mud.
Okay. Nelson.
That's a bit too fine a point on it, but yeah, what she said.
What do you think the core is, and where should it be if
well,
it's not there
the
now?
The core, I think, is a socially and economic diverse sort of town. And I think Ron brilliantly brought that back last fall. I think he's completely strayed from it in, you know, this core question always either relates to families or sort of the theme of a show. So I would say that this the core theme of One Life to Live. The core families, of course, the Lords, which, you know, have been basically decimated and sort of merged with the Buchanan family. I consider the Buchanan family a core family on the show. I think it's a strong family. I think it's survived a lot. The Buchanans have survived a lot of regime changes, and they really miraculously have, you know, survived. The Lords need to be clearly, like, the Lord family needs to be clearly defined, and it needs to, now that you have Tina back, Vicky, Todd is a Lord, you know, Jessica, Natalie, well, Natalie's a Buchanan. But I think they really need to refocus on the Lord family. I love, the one thing I love about Ron is that he's really fleshed out the Kramer family, and I think it's one of the best families in daytime. I wish there was more airtime with them. So I would say, ideally, it should be the Kramers, the Lords, the Buchanans. I hope, but you need a, you know, you have the Vegas. You need a family that, you know, is disenfranchised in some way. And I want the goddamn Wolicks back. Can we not bring the Wolicks back? I mean, you know, the Vegas are great, but we need that sort of struggling family against all odds, you know, sort of perspective on the show. That I think he's sort of passively, aggressively, you know, focusing on, but not, you know, seriously. So that's what I think. I mean, it has to be the rich and the poor and the in-between.
Where do you see exterior characters such as the Balsams and those type of characters fitting into the core of the show?
Well, I love Roxy, and I love the Balsam unit. I just don't see them struggling so much anymore. You know what I mean? Like, I think Rex isn't. I mean, Rex has BE shares. I mean, I got some BE shares in the mail the other day. I mean, who cares? I mean, I just think they need to be struggling a bit more. And I think he's. And I've written about this in my column. I find that he really did a disservice to the character of Gigi by, you know, making her work or getting her employed at BE. And it's like, you know what? That character should really be a struggling single mom. And you could almost ride that social, economic diversity on her character alone. But I don't, I mean, they brought her back to, you know, the diner and then it burnt down. And then now she's at Roadie's. Yeah, the Balsams are cool. I would definitely focus on Shane and Gigi as sort of that struggling younger demographic.
Okay.
But they need to definitely bring, you know, either Roxy back into that realm and just show the struggles of it. I think, you know, work on that element of, you know, struggle with his characters, and I don't really see it.
Well, Jamie, as the newest One Life to Live viewer amongst us, what do you consider One Life to Live's core to be, and where do you think it should be?
Like Nelson said, historically, I mean, everything I've ever read about the show was that it was supposed to be the anti-PNG show, where it was all about the waspy, wealthy families. It was supposed to be about, you know, the haves and the have-nots. And I don't see much of that anymore. But I don't see much of that anymore on any of daytime. It's like there really isn't any poor left. It's like the 80s trend of showing the super wealthy families is now the end thing to do on all the soaps. But I think that going forward, to me, I would base the core on the popularity. I mean, the core for me would probably be the Vicky versus Dorian feud, Todd and Blair, getting them restructured because they're popular. And there is some, I think there's this whole making Todd a super evil one-note villain is not a, I'm a Todd fan, so I'm not interested in Todd. That's one of the few reasons I watch. And his relationship with Star, I think that's core to the show. McBain is core to the show for a lot of people. I'm not a big fan of John McBain's character. But for some reason, he's core. Maybe I'm drinking Kool-Aid here because I don't like the character, but I'm just saying I think that in this day and age of soapdom, I think the core should probably be what's working. And so I don't know. I mean, a lot of the core for me got stripped when Evangeline left because, I mean, I think Todd Blair Evangeline could have been really hot. But, yeah, The Vicky Dorian feud, I think, is one of the best in daytime. I like Nora versus Lindsay. I like Bo and Nora. You know, they were one of the couples I actually liked when I started watching. But it just seems like it's all over the place.
And I am not going to argue with you one bit when it comes to feuds, because that has been my main – what I've maintained throughout this entire series is that there aren't enough of the core feuds on any of these shows anymore. Let's cover a few of the basic categories that we've discussed in all the episodes, and then we'll get to Todd and we'll get to some of the more current storyline things. And where – how do you see diversity on this show? At least in, from my experience, it's always seemed in the few short years that I've watched, I've only been watching about 10 years, that of all the ABC soaps, it's done the best in that period of time. It had the Vegas, it had Evangeline's family, they had RJ Gannon and his family. Where do you see the role of diversity in on this show, and in terms of improving the show, how would you work with what they have already? Tina?
Well, first and foremost, I know there are a lot of people who are not fans of the Vegas. I sometimes think that they're maybe not the greatest family. But they can actually do a lot with the Vega family right now. At this point in time, Antonio has basically lost most of his money. Christian has never made a lot of money. He's basically made enough to keep himself going. And with the diner burning down, if there's a problem with that insurance check, then you truly have a family that's down on its luck and truly struggling, which would keep in premise with the show, as Nelson was talking about earlier. RJ missing from the canvas seems like a huge gaping hole in the whole Nora-Lindsay dynamic. To have Nora find out about how Lindsay faked her breakdown from a letter that was photocopied that RJ supposedly wrote. I mean, it's like, you know, he really should have been on screen. He should have been taunting Lindsay for months. Him snap one day and tell Nora the truth. That's my thought.
I totally agree with you on that. The only thing that I might think of is a possible defense towards that is if I believe the actor had a festival going on through a large portion of the summer in Canada this year. So if he was out of the country, that might have prohibited him from being involved in it. But I'm not sure on that. It may have been prior to that point.
Yeah, blame Canada, damn it. Blame us. We always get the blame.
There you go. I will do that.
I'm joking.
Nelson, so what do you think of diversity on this show, whether it be ethnic or sexual diversity?
I don't even want to talk about this topic about when I play. It's like, I completely agree with Tina. To not have Timothy Stickney there during that debacle of a wedding, this misogynist crap that he keeps giving Lindsay, was just unforgivable. Rewrite, reschedule it. Come on, Timothy Stickney can't be the busiest actor, you know, around. I mean, he's talented, which is and actually a real black actor. So it's probably why. I was really shocked by that. And I feel I don't think the storyline would have worked regardless if he was there. But I mean, you have a letter? You know, Nora could have typed that up. I mean, what the hell is that? Anyway. In terms of diversity, well, we got the Mindorians. That's a whole new race.
What do you think of the fact that, like, the character of Layla and her boyfriend have been basically sidelined? Evangeline is in a coma.
I've never been an Evangeline fan, so she can stay in a coma for, as far as I'm concerned. As long as, unless they recast it with like someone like Victoria Rowell or something, then I'm fine. Is it Tika? She plays what's her name?
Tika Sumner.
Yes, I love her. I think she has great chemistry with Mark Lawson, who plays Brody, and she's not, you know, given enough to do on that show. One Life to Live, I mean, I'm not a rule person per se. I'm usually the person who likes to break rules, but One Life to Live needs a strong black family. I mean, it's a part of its fabric, you know, its identity. So I would definitely bring Rachel Gannon back.
Timothy.
If I have to recast Hank, I'd recast Hank too. And, you know, really explore the Gannon. I love the Gannon-Hannon thing, you know, like the Jewish-black merging of their families, and I love that. I would definitely bring that back. I'd lay off the Latinos. I mean, you know, Wilmington does have one of the most racially diverse casts. I mean, you know, yeah, Bethann Bonner's not Latina, but she plays a Latina character. You have the Vegas. I like what they're doing with Carlotta and Charlie. I fear they may pair him with Roxy, but I would definitely pair Charlie with Carlotta, because then you really get that struggle, right, between the rich and the poor. And, you know, Charlie's not, you know, the richest guy in the world either. So it could be a nice little struggle between them. It also, you know, Carlotta also had a brief flirtation with Clint. Clint! So there's, I think that, you know, that would be wise of them. I'm really surprised that even though they aired the gayest episode in the history of daytime television last week, with Carlo and Jonas being, you know, bum buddies.
Bum buddies.
Yeah, I don't even want to talk about the logistics of that sexual encounter. Right? But anyway, yes, take your kids away from the computer. But I'm shocked that, you know, they're against goddamn Azrael terms. You know, that's their time slot competitor in most markets, the majority of the markets, and if not all. And I just think, why Ron, I think Ron could really write a great, you know, gay character. And let's not forget, you know, Willing to Live pretty much did it, you know, with Billy Douglas. I mean, so that would be returning to its roots. Like, we don't need to go to Mindora. Like, let's go to its real roots, you know. Let's go to its, you know, have and have not roots. Let's do that. And you know, unfortunately, minorities are a part of that, because they're the usual ones that are disenfranchised. So I think he has a lot of work to do. Having said that, I don't think he lives, like, in waspy. Like, Landview's not that waspy to begin with. So I think they have they're way ahead of the game.
Jamie, I want to pick up on something. On the Days of Our Lives episode, it was pointed out that of all the soaps, they would be the soap that could basically write a gay couple without it being a public service announcement. The last two characters that One Life to Live wrote as gay, one was a psychopathic murderer, and the other one was, all of a sudden I had it and it left me, Marcy's brother. If you were going to improve diversity, both ethnically and with gay characters, starting with the gay characters, how would you do it?
I guess what I would do is whatever happened to for Tina and Nelson, what ended up happening with Ryan Phillippe's character? Did he die, or is he still alive?
No, he went out. He just left town.
He left town.
Why not recast him with a really strong actor and bring him back to town, reconnect him with the families that he was connected with, have him have an already established gay husband and a child that they're adopting, or let them try to adopt Star's kid or something like that. I think it needs to be organic. I don't think you can just go, let's add a gay character. I want to piggyback on this diversity discussion.
Well, he played
into
Marty's history, too. Let's have Jamie finish,
because he hasn't really had a chance to talk yet.
On diversity is I applaud, and I do, you know, get that it's usually safe to use the minority characters as the disenfranchised, because that is a part of our culture, but it's also not the same story. We have a culture now where Oprah is the wealthiest woman in entertainment. We're about to have a possible black president. Why not show some minorities with some money and power, instead of them always having to be the woe is me characters? I mean, why did the Vegas have to lose their money? I mean, let's show the American dream. I mean, let's show, you know, that black people can have money and power and be bitchy and be they don't have to be the saintly doctor or the saintly lawyer. I mean, let's let One Life to Live. They started the diversity role, but I think YNR really did it best, you know, in the 90s with the Winters, because those were flawed, realistic rags to riches characters, and I don't really see that on much of any daytime anymore. Evangeline was a saint. I mean, she managed to be popular, but she just was that typical black soap character that has to be the saintly character that's everybody's lawyer, doctor, friend, veterinarian. And I mean, You know, I do think they should bring her. I wasn't a big fan of hers, but I'm a popular vote guy. I'm a popular novel guy. And if she was that popular and people were yammering about that Todd-Vangeline pairing, I don't get why sometimes in this dying industry, people just don't give the fans what they want. Why they didn't give them Todd and Evangeline when people were crying for it. I would love to be a fly on the wall in some of these executive decisions where they say, nope, we're not going to give them Todd and Evangeline, but we're going to give Todd and Marty a kiss. I mean, what is that?
Yeah. But you know, I mean, sorry, you know, Renee Elise Goldsberry is a black actress asking for certain privileges in her contract, and that's just unheard of in daytime. You and I know that, yeah. Jamie. I mean, doesn't happen. That's what she did. I mean, she wanted to stay. She wanted to stay.
If Martha Byrne can't get it in her contract, you think Elise Goldsberry is going to be able to?
If Jeannie Francis can't, she won't either.
Yeah, and see, that with ABC, I hate, you know, I love my ABC, but that's just a thing with women, period. I mean, they never give their women the contractual outs.
Except
that
for Ingo Rademacher.
Well,
he's male. Yeah, is he male?
Know,
yeah.
I mean, they lost Vanessa Marcel, freaking Tamara. They're about to lose Alicia, all because they don't give their women outs. They only give them to the male actors who are coasting on their 1990s glory.
They're probably the only women on woman on ABC Daytime that truly has all the outs she wants is probably Susan Lucci.
But I think I think Erica Slezak does.
Well, she has a team.
No, she gets forced vacation. Yeah.
Well, I'm talking about the front burner lead actresses, not the legacy lead actresses. I'm talking about, you know, the Tamara Bronze, the Vanessa Marcells, that we've heard these stories over and over again. I mean, Jeannie Francis complained for years that she couldn't get the same outs as Tony Geary, and that's ridiculous.
I can get more outs than Jeannie Francis.
You know, they give outs to Ingo. I'm sorry. Loved Ingo in the 90s, but when has he had a good storyline? Come on. Give it to the women. What's good for the goose is good for the gander. But, I mean, losing Renee was a big – and, again, I wasn't a big fan of the Evangeline character, but – she had a fan base, and I don't see why they don't move heaven and earth in this dying day to create and build from what they have. And like Tika, I love Tika. She's a musician. Why don't they do something with this character? I mean,
she could be the next Adriana, actually, if they were smart.
Well, I guess it's time to stop beating around the bush. We keep mentioning Todd and Marty, and it keeps coming up. So I'm gonna let's discuss Todd as part of our villains discussion, because he is arguably one of the show's biggest villains, depending on how you look at the definition of villain. There's others who can also fall into that category, but in terms of enduring villains, he's probably one of its biggest. Right now, Ron is in the midst of writing this storyline where Todd and Marty apparently either fall in love or it's something that really – the storyline in and of itself just bothers me to no end. And these promotions that have been coming out that were online, it's just – you know, this type of thing shouldn't be happening with the character of Marty. And I am not a fan of the character of Marty, but it's making Todd to be even – I mean, it's renewing him as a villain in some respects, but at the same time, it's destroying him. What do you guys think of the role of villains in One Life to Live, and what do you think of what's going on with Todd? Jamie, you go first this time.
Okay. I don't see Todd as a cookie-cutter villain. I see Todd as an anti-hero in the same vein as Jack Devereaux on days when he was written well, Luke back in the days when he was still a tortured anti-hero and not just a buffoon. I mean, that's how I came to see Todd. I know he has this unspeakable thing that he's done in his past, but I actually see Todd as the show's romantic lead opposite Blair. So for me, being that Todd is my favorite character on the show, I hate this storyline. I don't think that any reformed rapist would go back and torment their victim when we've seen for years that he has so much pain and remorse about this. I don't think, I mean, Todd has to be certifiable. I mean, he has to be psychotic. That's the only way that they can redeem this, is that he has a mental illness, because he would not, the Todd that I've watched for 4 years, I don't think he would do this, especially what he went through with that horrible actress that couldn't act and that, you know, that raped him. I'm not buying this. Not buying anything. Ron has destroyed Todd. He's destroyed Todd and Star's relationship. And I get the skeevies about this, and I don't want to be a hypocrite because everybody knows that Roger and Holly on Guiding Light are one of my favorite couples ever, and Roger raped Holly at least twice. And there's no excuse. Marital rape is still rape, but Holly loved Roger, and their relationship was this Wuthering Heights classic, you know, she knows he's not good for her, but she keeps going back type situation. Where this is not that situation. Todd gang raped Marty, passed her around with some other guys. And I mean, I don't see the core audience of Daytime is women. This is an insult to every woman in America who would watch this show. And he's about to really undo all of the good kudos he's gotten in the last year, in my opinion, with this one obscene storyline.
And you brought up something that I want to ask Tina about, because one of the dichotomies for me in watching this storyline is we watched Todd be written where he was basically going after Cole because of the perceived rape of Star, or what he believed to be rape, or what he portrayed as rape, even though it wasn't. And we watched for 3 months this storyline play out about how Todd maintained that it was rape and how that could never happen to his child. And then you turn around and he's now holding a woman hostage who has amnesia, who he raped in the past. How do you go from having 3 months of a storyline where he's totally upset about it and that's affecting his psyche the way it did with Star? And then you turn around and have him start falling for the character that he raped years ago. Tina, what do you think?
Well, first and foremost, I have a lot of things to comment on. I'm going to start with this is classic Todd. And the reason this is classic Todd is because he hasn't done just one bad thing in his history. He's done a lot of bad things. And he's always had excuses made for him by Vicky, by Blair, and it's never his fault in his mind. This whole Marty situation is not going to be Todd's fault. This is Blair's fault for taking away his kids and throwing them out of the house. This is Star's fault for giving away his grandchild. Nothing is ever Todd's fault. And everything is just a means to an end. In his mind, this whole thing with Marty is a way for him to get his hands on his grandchild. That's all he cares about. Because this is Todd. Todd has always done everything in order to get his end result. And whoever he hurts, whoever he kills, whoever he does along the way is okay, because everybody makes excuses for him and it's never Todd's fault. If you look back in time, and he's been on the show, 20 years maybe? Nothing's ever been his fault. Even the rape was not his fault in his mind.
In terms of writing the character, though, don't you think that there's a valid question can be raised about how he can go and use the rape as the reason and blame it on Cole? And
can I piggyback in here right just for a second? I have to say I disagree with that a little bit, because I understand that probably was who he was, you know, instinctively when they started writing the character, but this is the same thing ABC did when they recast Carly. Okay, so when I've been watching, I've seen Todd show remorse for that rape several times and show remorse for all of the things he's done. Yeah, he still struggles with it because he's an anti-hero, but he's never stricken me as just this one-note, always evil character. It's like ABC does this thing when they recast or when a new writing regime comes in that they want to restore that popularity, so they take the character all the way. That's why I struggle with this. Do people even really want characters to grow? Because we watched Tamara grow Carly up leaps and bounds, but then they were, you know, everybody was, oh, we're going to make her back like she was, like Sarah's Carly. So they reversed her and reverted her back to a 19-year-old screeching psycho. And that's what it seems like they're doing to Todd to me. You know, I didn't see that Todd, that, you know, just monstrous evil Todd, but he went from somebody who was struggling with his demons to somebody who's just, you know, really just living in him again. And I think it's cartoonish. I mean, if that's who he was, that won't be a character that I'm rooting for anymore.
To an extent, maybe it's the fact, Jamie, that you and I are newer viewers in comparison to Tina. But I have seen him be remorseful for the rape. And that's part of what makes this so weird to watch. It's like, here's the person that part of the reason he's so upset and blaming the fact that Cole supposedly raped Star was in part because of his remorse and his demons. And now they turn around and basically have him kidnapping and falling in love with him. Nelson, what do you think of Todd's role as a villain? And what do you think of the Marty and Todd dynamic and the potential romance that they're seeming to be writing?
I think Todd is one of the best villains on daytime television. I don't think he's black and white. I think he has deep psychological issues. I think he's the only rapist on daytime that has, like, sort of organically, justifiably sort of not been redeemed. I don't think Todd's redeemed at all, which is the great part of, you know, who Todd is as a character. I think Ron has been writing, and in particular, Trevor St. John, I think, gets his character better than Roger Howarth ever did. Roger was infamous for wanting to redeem him and make him sort of an anti-hero. Trevor plays him like the sick fucking bastard he is, and I love it. And, you know, he's sick in all of his relationships, and Trevor, you know, filled in a lot of the blanks like when Dina was writing the show. I love how Ron writes Todd. I think he's, you know, fascinating. He went to jail. He was convicted. He knows he raped Marty, and he is haunted. He's like this haunted, he'd be on Dark Shadows, you know, like he's this haunted, tortured sort of villain. Usually villains aren't tortured, you know, with their issues. They just like, you know, Carlo Hesser, like, kill him, off of their head, you know, they don't care. Todd is really tortured, you know, and he really can't change himself, which is really kind of fascinating. And he sort of rapes people on an emotional level now. I mean, he's a, through and through, he's a rapist. I mean, I think Gary Tomlin wrote this, and I loved that episode where Todd found Star and Cole in bed together, because I found, wow, he managed to even rape his daughter in her first sexual, you know, experience by bringing violence to her first sexual encounter. It's like the man can't help himself, and I found that so freaking fascinating. Marty and Todd, I've written about this. I am really worried for Ron. I think this could do him in. I feel sorry for Susan Haskell. Like, I almost wish Christina Chambers is playing the part right now. Because Susan's lying in the bed with that big buck teeth of hers and smiling at Todd. I mean, you know what? It's so offensive. I am the most morally corrupt person in the world, but I am offended by the storyline. Because, and yes, Ron has gone in the press and said, you know, this is what Todd would do. He would see an opening, and he'd see a chance to, you know, maybe right a wrong and have a talk to. I mean, the guy's, like, a talk to? I mean, this is what the storyline's about? It's so offensive, and I'm getting really angry, because what are the chances of your rape victim falling into your hands who has amnesia? I mean, that's a rapist's biggest dream, is to have their victim have amnesia. And it just, she just happened to fall into his hands? I mean, it's so ridiculous. And you know what? Yes, she has amnesia, and Susan Haskell's saying, you know, it's really hard as an actress, and I got down. I don't know how she's doing this. I really don't know how she's doing it. I feel sorry for her.
And did you not see that episode?
She's doing it because he has a different face. That's how she's
okay, you know what? This is like fast. People have body memory. You know what I mean? Mm. You sense things. You have instincts. And when he touched her while she's lying in that virginal white bed, it's just, she would flinch. I mean, you just, that was a traumatic experience. They've never been friends. They're not Luke and Laura. I just think that there should have been more of a visceral, you know, reaction from Susan and, you know, Marty. And I don't think Todd would do this. I think Todd, the Todd that I think I know, and obviously Ron has his own ideas of him, even though I, you know, concur with his version of Todd, I think Todd, who's always out for himself, would have thought, I'm going to save Marty, bring her back. She'll thank me. Everyone will love me. He would get more out of it if he brought her back. Look what I did, Cole. I saved your mom. Look, Star, I saved your mom.
Now give me my kid.
Sorry?
Now give me my grandkid.
Yes, exactly. This story does not make sense. It's so beyond Dina Higley at this point. Like, it does not make sense. I'd rather them fucking fall in love at this point, because this is just, it's, Todd would not do this. Todd is not stupid.
Well, you're right, he's not.
And supposedly the rumors are that she's going to remember as they're just about to make love. Now, if that turns out to be true...
I bet you it's going to be true. He's doing this for a murder mystery. I can just sense it. He's doing this. Who will kill Todd? And I think he's starting to lose Ron. He's starting to lose sort of the organic, authentic, the natural progression of storyline and character development that leads to these big moments. I think now he's thinking of these big moments. Let's make Todd really evil again and shoot him and kill him and have a murder mystery, but he's still alive. I mean,
so
come on.
So then in the writing of Todd as a villain currently on this show, if we are going to give it a grade so that we can wrap up the Todd portion of the villain discussion and move on to the other villains, would you grade Todd as a villain right now on the show in terms of A is the best he can be and F is the worst? Nelson?
I would give him an A. I mean, I don't think the scriptwriters are really saving the storyline. I think they're writing Todd, other than his decision of, kidnapping Marty. I mean, now he has a kidnapping charge to him. I mean, why would he do that? Todd would never do that. Other than that, when he found out Tess, I thought that was total pure Todd. You know, you canceled Todd. You know, he was like, looked at Jessica and like, you're fucking Tess. Tess is back. Jessica doesn't live here anymore. So I love that part. So I do find that he's the best villain on daytime because he's sort of a human being.
Tina?
In terms of having flaws.
Well, I would give him an A-, and why should he worry about a kidnapping charge? Look at Marcy. They got her off of a kidnapping charge, an attempted murder. They can get anybody off of anything in Landview, so what does Todd care? And I'm sorry, his basic, trying to shake Tess out of Jess, pushing her up against the wall, I thought that was priceless.
Jamie, what are your thoughts on
Todd? Well, I think Todd would do that, though. I think that's totally Todd's character. And I'm sorry, I didn't say anything to Tess because she drives me nuts.
Well, I'm sorry, Jamie. How would you rate Todd as a character being written?
I'd rate it an O for obscene. I'm sorry, I just I don't like this version of Todd. I liked him better as like a struggling anti-hero who did bad things but wasn't just batshit crazy. I think it's cartoonish and one note, and it doesn't turn me on at all.
I would give it a generous C-, because the stuff with Tess is great, but I cannot get past what this story with Todd and Marty. I just cannot get past it at this point.
That's one way that they've ruined the character, but his relationship with Star has also been brutalized.
Oh, very good point.
They had the best dad-daughter relationship in daytime.
Well, I'm sorry. I say what you will about Todd and Star's relationship, but you cannot have a father-daughter relationship be that great all the way through a teenager's life cycle. Reality is going to set in, and that teenager
is
going to turn against
their parents. Well, of course, every teenager ends up hating their dad, but, I mean, come on. Every dad doesn't sling their daughter down a flight of stairs, though.
Yeah, but this is Todd. I mean, she already forgave him for stealing her brother.
Well, let's not forget the big, the elephant in the room, pink elephant in the room. Ron doesn't know how to write for daughters and fathers. He only knows how to write for fathers and sons.
Because of the fact that the show does have other villains who would be, for the purpose of this discussion, I'm going to refer to them as lesser, though they are not necessarily lesser. You have Dorian and Tess, and you have, let's see, who else would there be? The Carlo Hessers. Even to a certain extent, that some of the stuff that's going on at BE, Clint is becoming much more cutthroat. Each of them have their own villainous ways. How do you rate the rest of this show's villains? Are there any areas that you guys think need improvement to improve the show? Tina, you go first.
Clint's not a villain. He just finally grew a set of balls. There's a difference.
Any of the other characters as villains that you think need improvement?
No, I think Dorian's great. She walks that great balance between villain and sympathy quite well. I think Brody has the makings of a great villain if they write him properly. You only need so many villains on a show because, you know, we don't need any more Spencer Trumans, the villains that eat the show. I don't know. I think they're all pretty good.
Nelson, what do you think of the other villains on the show as they exist in their context?
I mean, I agree with Tina. I think Brody could be an interesting future villain. One thing I like about When Mice Live, other than, you know, the Dina era, is that, you know, it's like Y&R. I mean, everyone sort of takes a turn being a villain. Like, Adriana was a villain. And the only issue I think it's fine on the villainy, you know, element of the show, except for the fact that I just have a feeling that they're going after this Passions Days of Our Lives audience by making Dorian DeMera, you know, this cartoonish character, and then Carlo Hester. And, I mean, I don't even know what that was. You know,
it was all for that one line.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, though. I didn't have the problems with the Mindora storyline that you did, Nelson, but those scenes so totally capped off that story for me.
Well, and I, you know, wrote this in my recent Nelson ratings that, you know, can one episode save, you know, an atrocity of the storyline? And one great episode, one brilliant, funny, amazing, irreverent episode. I mean, it's gayer than Aswell Turns has been in 2 years, and they have two gay characters on the show. No, it doesn't save the Mindora mess. But it was a violent, like, save. I mean, it was a pretty great save. I have to give them props for that. But I don't think anyone, other than, I don't know. I would love to know what Agnes Nixon thought of that.
Jamie, what are your thoughts on the other villains on the show?
Well, I think that they need to move heaven and earth to get Melissa Fumero back as Adriana. She's the best young adult potential villainess in a long time on all of Daytime. It was one of those things that just happened, just kind of like Arianne Zucker with Days and a few others, that the character didn't start off as a villain, but once they tapped into that, she was on fire. Dorian has never done much for me. I like her better when she's revealing why she's so flawed and why she's so screwed up, but when they play her cartoonish, it just seems like bad dinner theater.
What do you think of Tess?
Tess was my favorite character. Not now, I mean, because I don't even recognize Tess. But when she first became Tess and with Nash, they were awesome. The biggest mistake for me ever was the integration that found out that Jessica was the dominant personality. They should have made Tess the dominant personality and done like a Jason Morgan and just let Tess be the ones the Buchanans had to deal with permanently, because Jessica sucks as a character under Bree Williamson. I'm sorry. Tess was awesome. And
well,
I mean,
thought that's why he killed Nash. You know, I thought, why are you killing Nash that way?
See, well, I was going to bring that up, too, about Nash. It's like, why did we have to lose Nash but we get Brody? I mean, I don't think Forbes March was costing an arm and a leg. I mean, wasn't that he was in his first contract? Why did we have to – Nash and Tess were awesome. I don't see why we had to lose them and why he had to be sacrificed at the altar when they bring on Brody. I mean, what's the point of Brody?
You know, it made sense. I was not happy with, you know, them killing Nash off the way they did. But then, you know, when Tess came out, I was like, okay, I get what he's doing. I see what he's doing. This is pretty good.
I think it was a short-sighted decision to free up money for the 40th anniversary parade.
Yeah, but I thought Tess was going to maybe really, you know, be the dominant personality through Nash's death, but now she's so cartoonish and over the top and kidnapping people and trying to kill her mother that, you know, Jessica's coming back. So I'm like, well, then what was the point of that? Wouldn't it have been, like, poetic and romantic if Nash dies and the person he fell in love with comes out to the forefront? I mean, that would be a great legacy sort of tribute, and now this is just ridiculous. The fact that no one knows that she is Tess is disgusting. Tina would wipe that floor clean with that bitch. Sorry, Tina's not stupid, and I don't know. And Tina could be a great sort of vixen. I wouldn't say she's a villain, but she's a vixen. I'm sorry. Tina has done battle with, you know, Michael Grand and Gabriel Medina. She could wipe the floor clean with that. You know, if I see Brie Williams' eyes dark, like in front of someone that she's pretending to be Jess, she's like, her eyes are darting, she's smirking, evil, Grin. It's like, Jesus, play Jessica, you know?
Well, I think what, you know, if out of all of this we get another integration where Tess stays dominant, maybe with more traces of Jess to tone her down and not make her as cartoony, but that Tess is more primary rather than Jessica, then the death of Nash will have been for something.
See, and that, well, for me, it's a mute point at this point because Nash and Tess were such an awesome couple. I don't care at this point. And, you know, that's the worst thing a soap can do. Either you're yelling and screaming because you want change or you're happy. But when you just don't care anymore, that's turn off the TV time. And, I mean, without Nash there, I find the character, both characters perfectly. I mean, I think they should bring back Erin Torpey and spin her off in a new direction.
Here's the thing. I grew up with Jessica on screen, much like I grew up with Robin on GH. If she reverts back to Jessica, I could care less if she falls off the face of the earth and we never hear her name mentioned again. And that's really, really sad for someone like me who remembers her being born on screen, who remembers her appearance, and has grown up with her.
Yeah.
So they have to do something.
Well, you know, I find it interesting and slightly ironic in a, you know, depressing way that in the beginning of the year, I found that Jessica was actually written as a better vixen than Tess is being written now. Like, remember she went after Jared and her and, you know, people were scared that Tess was coming out. And Jessica was kind of like, bitch on wheels, as Jessica. And, you know, it sort of told the audience that, you know, they're integrated. And so her bitchy side sort of came out in the past. Mm-hmm. And I thought she was smart. Like, the whole nun thing with Allison, I thought that was great.
I'm like,
this is the Jessica I like. And now this is like, he can't integrate her now because she's so over the top. The only way she's going to avoid these charges, criminal charges, is by, you know, them just killing Tess off. I mean, I would have her fool. I would integrate her again and then a year from now tell the audience, Tess was in charge.
This is my thing on this, and this is no slam on Bree Williamson, but I'm just calling a spade, I'm being real. Dual roles in daytime require a hell of an actor, and I don't think she's up to the task. I think Tess worked better for her because it was more written to her strengths, and they really should have kept Tess that snarky Paris Hilton-esque bad girl, and that's who she should be trying to play. I don't want to watch her trying to handle a dual role because I've seen it done too many times good, and this is not good. This is
well,
bad.
And but though it's not quite as bad as good old As the World Turns and that awful, abominable, what was it, Chloe? Jennifer
that was still
Landon's,
a better actress, though. That was a horrible storyline, but Jennifer Landon was a better actress.
But the character that they gave her was just awful.
Yeah, but that character wasn't front burner and eating up every scene either. That was just a side story.
What show were you watching? That entire summer was that character show.
Well, I guess it's like see no evil, hear no evil. They're gone now, but Tess is still on my screen.
You know, Jennifer Landon would actually make a good Jess and Tess, actually.
Well, moving on to Heritage and Vets. Nelson, you've pointed out in your column and on this podcast that One Life to Live has basically spent more money, it seems, to get whoever they can back, and this show is just flush with characters. What areas can One Life to Live improve in with its Heritage and Vets, and either using them, bringing someone back, however you would see improving it?
I think they're doing a pretty good damn job at that. I don't think I would improve it, except I'd bring the real Tina Lord Roberts back to Landview. And I think they're doing a pretty good job. I mean, I think they need to flesh out Nora. I don't think I ever saw Nora and Clint fall in love. I think I saw them kiss once, which was really more of a plot device. I worry about Clint. I love this that he's, you know, really becoming his father's son. But I think he's kind of a one-note villain. I would love to see him really fall in love with Nora. But other than that, I think there's a really good mix. I think he's really balancing his cast, which is really large, and I like how he brings vets back, or like fan favorites back, but they don't have to stay for, you know, 10 years. I mean, they come in for, John Leprino was back for 2 episodes. That's all you need him back for. So I think, and that's life. I mean, people come and visit you, you know, when they leave town. I mean, that's, so I think he's fine on that part. I mean, it'd be nice to have Tina back though.
Well, and how would you develop the character of Tina if she ends up being a long-term character?
I'd start writing her like Tina, and I certainly wouldn't maroon her with a bunch of hair models. And she needs, I mean, she's being written. I can't even talk about it without, I'm just angry about it. This is not the Tina I know.
Okay. Well.
It's she's being written like Rebecca on Passions, and that's not who Tina is. Tina's not stupid. She makes a lot of mistakes, but she's not stupid. She does everything for the wrong reasons. She does everything, you know, she did everything wrong for the right reasons.
Tina, how do you look at the heritage and vets with this show, and is there an area where they can be improved or used better? Or?
There's a lot of people on this cast, and I know they try really, really hard to kind of have a balance. I mean, there are a couple characters that in my mind could disappear, and I wouldn't really care. But, you know, like he said, you know, in regards to Tina, she is so poorly written. And, you know, Ron Carlovati has a nickname online. It's Reron, because he seems to want to relive the past. And you know what? If he wants to relive the past, go back, read some scripts about the way Tina used to be, and write her that way again, because that's the only way we really want her on screen. Otherwise, she could get on a plane, hop to London, go live with Cord forever, and I really don't care.
Here's a question I'll pose to everyone, but I'll have Jamie answer it first. Is it possible that Tina, I mean, she hasn't had that many scenes with Sarah, but is it possible that Sarah is bogging the character of Tina down?
Well, you know, I like Justice. I know that the others don't, but that's, and well, I like feel her. Funny even commenting on this, because I understand, you know, I mean, Luke, you see how I act when they bring back Jack and Jennifer and don't write them right on days. So I won't take this moment from Nelson and Tina, because I don't know anything of Tina except that Andrea Evans was stalked in the 80s, because that's all I ever saw on Entertainment Weekly. So I don't really know. I don't have a history with this character, but I do have to agree with Nelson 100%. I've kind of been like, what's been so great about this Tina? That's Rebecca. That's Rebecca without any magic potions and spells going around. I mean, it's the same character I watched her play on Passions. I like Andrea Evans. I like that 80s era bombshell, big doe-eyed thing she does better than probably anybody. I mean, she's like a throwback to Cecile Duponier and all those, you know, Mindy Lewis, but I don't understand the point of bringing her back to so much fanfare and then putting her with people that she'd never even been in a scene with before. I mean, you know, who cares about Antonio going, Tina Lord? She's with Tina Lord? I mean, I think people wanted to see her with Vicky, you know? I mean, and moving forward, I mean, it's just the basic rules of writing for good characters. You write her to her history and to her strengths. I mean, you put her in a, for the brief time that Tuck Watkins was on, I mean, even, I don't think her Tina was ever with his David, but still, I mean, David, Tina, Dorian triangle for that 3-month period would have been a lot better and probably a lot more satisfying to fans than seeing her marooned with Christian and Stefano Hesser and Justice, Justice let me down. Justice, I'm so ashamed of you, because I've been defending you on this podcast for months, and I have to agree with everybody else. That damn Mindora climax, I was ashamed that I've been defending you, because you did come in there and act like you just had been on a damn merry-go-round instead of, like, and look at me, I'm like she's actually listening. But still, I mean, come on. I felt bad. This was just like all the months that I spent going, oh my God, I know Hogan's going to save days. And even though I do know now that that wasn't his fault, but I felt like I can't go on a message board now, because the people are like, what the hell happened? You know, and it's the same thing I'm feeling with Justice now. I'm like, she really showed that, I guess what people were saying was right. She's not up to being opposite old girl, Andrea. It's crazy. I don't know. One Life to Live has a lot of problems to me. I've thought it was great. I do think Ron's a good writer, but I've never been on this bandwagon. It's never really just made me think it's the savior of daytime. I mean, so I don't know. I mean, I'm not really seeing much different. I mean, it's it's had a lot of problems the last year, in my opinion.
See, I think that if you bookend the Ace's death 40th, or if you bookend Ace's death to the 40th anniversary, pretty much everything in between there came off better than anything else in soaps during that year.
See, that's your opinion. That's not my opinion.
No, well, but that's
not anymore.
But that's my opinion. Yeah. But after the 40th anniversary, to me, it's like everything just exploded. It's like a car driving at 90 miles an hour and a little mosquito went splat on the window, and except for giant. I guess I would ask this, though, because I don't know the history, but Jamie made me think of it. Is there a viable option of doing Tina versus Dorian based on the show's history, or developing this Tina versus Tess thing, Tina?
Tina always seemed to have a problem with just about everybody at some point in time. Tina versus Dorian can be very easily developed if David comes back on canvas. That's not going to take much at all. Tina versus Tess, that could work. Even Tina versus Vicky. You know, they're sisters, what have you, but they had their moments. But they need to find something for Tina to do that does not involve...
Diamonds in a safe?
Yeah.
Before we finish up the villain topic, one last character
Can I have one comment here?
Okay.
This is another thing that I see on ABC Daytime that's happening. I think that they bring these people back, these 80s legacy characters, the Lauras, the Anna Devanes, the Tinas, for the sole purpose of propping up their daughters. And then the only one that I really care about or think it works is Robin, because she's a character we love and, you know, and has actually played with Anna and actually had scenes with Anna. But when you do it with Laura and Lulu or Tina and Sarah, who these people are strangers acting wise, it just doesn't ring true. It's like they're trying to, you know, that's how Daytime built its template, is that you connected to the younger generation through the older generation, but it wasn't for 2 months or it wasn't for 1 month. It was over the course of the damn show that you fell in love with Erica through Mona and her relationship, or Ada and Rachel, or Laura and Leslie. But now they think, okay, let's bring these heifers back for 3 months and we'll make people like Lulu more. It doesn't work, people.
Well,
doesn't work.
Speaking of liking heifers, Lindsay is one of my favorite villains on this show. And
that's the best segue you have done in the whole time I've been on this podcast.
I agree.
I love Lindsay. She's always been one of my favorite characters on this show. I've thought that she plays a great villain, but at the same time, she does vulnerable very well, in my opinion. What do you guys think of the fact that Lindsay as a character has been sidelined either as a villain or in general?
I don't know that Lindsay is a villain. I think she's more of a vixen.
Nelson, what do you think?
Sorry, I was just putting my finishing touches on the Days of Our Lives script I'm writing right now. Catherine Hickman, you know, you're really pissing me off, Luke, with these questions. Now I'm really angry.
This is my job. This is my job to ask the hard questions and use terrible segues.
You're going to make me cry. You're totally Barbara Walters.
There you go.
I don't know why she's not on. You know, I don't even want to talk about it. I think I've said everything. I am so pissed off. I mean, I don't think Ron knows how to write for women. I just don't think he does. Lindsay was, you know, sort of a sicker version of Tina, and I think he wrote the ultimate storyline for her when, you know, we found out she killed Spencer. So thank you. That was great, and she should have won an Emmy for that. But I don't understand why he doesn't see what kind of gold mine he's sitting on with her. And, I mean, she's tied to the biggest legacy character on the show, Bo, other than Vicky. So I don't know why he doesn't, you know, she's not supposed to be on the show for the foreseeable future. I don't know what that means. I thought she kicked it out of the ballpark playing Olympia.
I mean, oh, I absolutely loved her. If there was one reason why that should have proven why she needs to be on her screen more, her playing Olympia was awesome.
Yeah.
Well,
with Andrea, let me just say this, because I wanted to say this earlier. I never thought I would say this, but I want Andrea Evans back on Y&R. I think Hogan Sheffer could write her, and I want her back as Tawny, Adrian Francis' on-screen mother. And I just don't understand how her daughter, Sarah Roberts, can be so miscast. I mean, it's Tina fucking Lord's daughter. I mean, Hayden Panettiere played her. She was a sassy, smart girl. She was kind of Star Manning before Star Manning, you know?
But isn't this still the writing? I still maintain that this is not necessarily the casting, and this is the writing for Sarah.
I mean, the woman abandoned Sarah, and now they're chummy. But then what? What did Asa do to Bo? Why is Bo so angry? I don't get that. I mean, Bo went on his own course a long time ago. Why is he, you know, I love the father-son opus to, you know, and it bookended beautifully with Ace's death until the 40th anniversary and the 1968 storyline. Get it? Great. But, I mean, I'm sorry. If there is a dysfunctional mother or parent-offspring relationship, it's
But what
Tina
Luke is trying
Sarah.
To say, how is her reaction to Tina Justice's fault?
It's it not just
the writers. They're writing
lines.
Them as chummy.
No, I know, but you can read the lines in a script and act it differently.
I honestly do not think
she
that
looked
that,
at her like she's.
I honestly don't think it's Justice's fault. I honestly think that the writing for that character is so weak that there is nothing on those pages. I wouldn't be surprised if she does it by the seat of her pants. To be quite,
I know what Nelson is saying though. I guess I'm jumping on both sides. Yeah, I know what he's saying though, because even when you're handed that's why I call it the Kim Zimmer Award for people who can turn shit into sugar. When you get handed bad shit, you just have to try to do the best. But I mean, this girl is what, 12?
But doing what Cameron Matheson's doing, you know, Justin's doing what Cameron Matheson's doing, and he's just playing it in.
Let's avoid all my children, because then you'll have me angry, and that will be even worse.
I don't know that it is truly Justice's fault. I've seen some glimmers of good acting between her and Tina.
I'm going to use this opportunity to move into the topic of couples, because there's been some major couples on this show, and there's some major fluctuation going on. Todd and Blair are no longer together, but they were in the same story, second verse, sing it over. It only gets worse for many, many years. Bo and Nora are broken up. You have David and Dorian were broken up. You have the younger characters, Marcy and Michael, they were broken up. They're working their way back together. But you have all of these couples on this show that are, in my opinion, I could be wrong on this, but there's very few of them that are actually being paired really well. I think that Gigi and Rex's storyline as a couple is doing really well. But other than a couple of the other ones, I like Talia and Antonio when they're being written well, caveat there. But what is it with the couples on this show, and how do you improve the couples on this show? Tina?
Oh, you mean you haven't heard online? G-Rex, the T-Rex that ate Landview, you haven't heard that yet?
They are welcome to their opinion, but I like them as a couple, and I think that they have great chemistry and that they're being very well written. But how would you improve One Life to Live through its couples?
I think that they need more couples to grow organically. Because this whole Clint Nora thing, it just does not work for me. There's nothing there.
No,
like was said earlier, there was a kiss and that's it. And now they're in a relationship. There's nothing there. There's definitely way more tension between Nora and Bo every time they're on screen than anything that's come down the pike for Clint and Nora. And I honestly think Clint and Lindsay have a much better relationship than Lindsay and Bo.
One of the best darn couples on this show is Nora and Lindsay. Screw Bo and Clint.
Vicky and Charlie, I think Charlie is one of the better pairings for Vicky since Clint back in the day. I mean, David was sweet with his blondie thing, but Ben was not one of my favorite characters. David Vickers has chemistry with a dog. It doesn't really matter who you pair him with. Some of these couples, I'm just glad Todd and Blair are over, and I hope they never go there. And I actually think if they want to keep John McBain on screen, they've probably made the best possible pairing for him at the moment, which is with Blair. I don't know. Some of these pairings just don't make any sense.
See, and I would say that John and Blair, to me, that couple, I just end up fast-forwarding. I just can't watch it. I love the character of Blair, but I cannot watch her and John together. I don't know what it is. I just cannot watch it. Nelson,
who would you put John with?
To be honest, I've always liked... Okay, let me rephrase this. John, first of all, is not necessarily my favorite character by any stretch of the imagination. But as a character, I've always preferred him when he's a lone wolf as opposed to being paired with someone.
Wow,
I thought,
that really works on daytime.
I know. It doesn't work on daytime, but I've found... The best time John was ever paired with anybody was when it was with David Vickers and he was investigating crap, because David Vickers actually made the man smile once in a while. Romantically, I just have never seen it. The Natalie versus Evangeline wars, all that stuff. Ugh. But Nelson, which couples need improvement on this show, and how would you improve One Life to Live through its couples?
One Life to Live, historically, it's never been like a super couple show. They had Jake and Megan and Tina and Cord, and Vicky and Clint, I guess. I guess during, you know, the Evangeline Wars, they sort of, I didn't buy them as super couples, but, you know, it was the first time, I think, in history, that in One Life to Live's history, that fans were that insane about a couple. I think they have really great potential for couples on the show, and I wrote this too recently, where Weinar shows their couples fall in love by, you know, you show, you don't tell. And I feel like when they're supposed to telling us these people are in love, I mean, all they do is talk about why they shouldn't be in love or why they should be in love. Where, like, conversely, Weinar will actually show us, like, Daniel and Amber hate each other, you know, because they cheated on each other. But then they have this really nice moment where they forget, you know, the problems, and they start bonding, and then they, you know, come back to reality, and they're like, oh, shit, these are our issues. So I think they have a lot of issues in the romance department. I like how Blair is bringing out John's sort of more comedic side. I like Vicky and Charlie a lot, mostly because of Brian Kerwin. It'd be interesting to see Dorian and A. Martinez, Robin Strasser and A. Martinez. I don't know if that's going to work necessarily. You know, the best couple on the show is Dorian and Vicky. I don't know how you can have Tina on your show without a love interest, because she's always defined by who she's in love with. I mean, it's always Cord. But I don't know if he's going to pair her with anyone. It's kind of interesting. I think she'd totally jump John McBain. She always liked sort of stupid.
There you go. Now that's something I could get behind. Tina could make John interesting.
Yeah. It's,
What is it with you people cursing poor Tina?
Well, I love, no, I'm just saying she'd bang him. I mean, I have to say Dorian's reaction to Blair, you know, telling her, that she was sleeping with John was hilarious. I mean, that was a Dorian. It was the first time I saw Dorian Lord, other than the 40th anniversary, come back to life. I mean, that's exactly what Dorian would do. Like, tell me, you know, is he hung? Like, that's exactly what she would have said. Like, they totally had a girlfriend fest over that. I don't think they're a long-term couple, though. Rex and Gigi, I really liked in the beginning. I think he's writing Rex really well. JP's, you know, kicking you out of the ballpark. I find that he's not writing Gigi that well, and she's starting to grate on my nerves, and I find that he's sort of writing them as a Days of Our Lives couple now. I don't know if that makes sense. I find that One Night to Live, their primary couples, their successful couples, have never been really romantic pairings. They've been like Dorian and Vicky. I mean, why aren't Todd and Tina in scenes together? Tina is his full sibling. They both have the same parents. They have had two scenes together. You know, she should be entrenched in Todd's world, not Tess. So I always find that, you know, John and Todd are a great couple, and Blair and Dorian are a great couple. You know, Star and Todd. So I think One Life to Live really doesn't need, you know, the romantic sort of element in the show like everyone else does. And that's what sort of made it unique.
Tina, what do you think of the fact that couples, whether they be romantic or not, I mean, Bo and Rex's dynamic, and then Lindsay and Nora, then you have Vicky and Dorian. How do you look at those platonic couples?
You know, they're great for bromances, but maybe Jamie wants to expound on the bromances some more.
I think all of the daytime soaps have got to have romantic couplings. I just have to say that because I know that whatever distinguished these shows in the past, we got to look at where we are today. And if there's no romance and if there's no love in the afternoon, what's the point? And Vicky and Charlie, I think, really work because they're the anti, they're Carl and Rachel. They're somebody that people over 50 can root for. And you can see, I think One Life to Live has really done that well in the last 2 years with them. And with, I loved Clint and Dorian. I hate that they did this cartoonish crap with them because I thought that was really refreshing that he found love later in life with an arch nemesis of his ex-wife. Him and Nora are as boring as watching paint dry. I mean, I'm about ready to, if they're going to keep them as a couple, can they recast Nora with Liz Kiefer, who played Blake opposite him on Guiding Light? I mean, I'm sorry. It's boring, and I mean, does Nora have a sister? Can we cast Liz Kiefer as his sister, her sister, or something? I mean, Jerry.
Well, Jamie,
Burgoyne,
you're opening a can of worms up because they brought Liz Kiefer back as Nora. Then you could actually pair Bo and Nora back together. Oops,
yeah, I mean, I'm the biggest.
Nora has
rock
a sister, doesn't she? Yes, she does.
Well, then they need to bring Liz Kiefer on as Nora's sister. Tina. Liz Kiefer and Jerry Verdorn played Ross and Blake on Guiding Light. They're one of the best May-December couples ever, and Guiding Light refuses to use the still liquid hot Liz Kiefer. I mean, and I just hate to see Jerry Verdorn being wasted on this show. I don't buy him as Clint in this whole J.R. Ewing type thing. I would really like to see him paired in a romantic story because I think that's what he does well. I love Todd and Blair, but I'm like Tina. It's like as much as I love them, I don't know if I want to put myself through that or anybody else to see them find their way back together again, but I'm a sucker for the 4 or 5 time couples. So, you know, I like them, but I really think that he's riding Todd, you know, that they're doing what they did with Stefan Cassadine. They're turning a brilliant, masterful, troubled character into a one note buffoon villain. And I don't know if there's any way out for Todd after this. So I don't know. I don't like her with John McBain. I did like John and Evangeline for a brief bit, but I'm sorry. I loved Michael Easton on freaking Days. I loved him as the vampire guy on Port Charles, but I'm just really wanting ABC Daytime to stop giving these people all this cachet when it's not paying off anymore. I don't think he should be the lead actor on this show. I don't see why they put so much into him when it's not paying off. He's not even a core character of this show. So why is, I mean, Todd is, he's a lord. He's, you know, I mean, I just don't see why there should be even big meetings about what we need to do with John McBain. If it's not working organically, then what you need to do is get rid of him and keep Nash because Nash was working with a popular couple.
Well, in wrapping up couples, I'm going to go around. You don't necessarily have to give explanations, but if you're going to break up and put together one couple, who would it be, Nelson? Which couple would you break up, and which people would you put together?
Well, they're already kind of broken up, but I the only couple in Landview, as far as I'm concerned, is Michael and Marcy, and I would definitely bring them back together.
And who would you break up?
Who would I break up? Well, I'd also bring back together Todd and Blair. I have to say that I really like them together, and that's an unpopular opinion, but I really find that they work better together. They're one of the few couples, and I'm sad about this breakup. God, I think everyone else is broken up.
Okay, Tina?
Clint and Nora. Clint and Nora.
Okay, Tina, who would you break up and who would you put back together?
I would put Vicky and Charlie back together. Vicky needs a good love interest, and I think Charlie's a great love interest for her. And who would I break up? Gigi and Rex, because I think they're going to be better off apart than they are together.
Jamie, who would you break up and who would you put together?
Okay, I have to say, I would break up Marcy and Recast because Kathy Breyer is great, and they really need to tie her closer to the canvas. I'd like to see Joey Buchanan come back and romance her in, like, this quirky, hot guy likes the quirky chick storyline and let – I mean, they made so many mistakes with Al slash whatever his name is and with all that ghost stuff. I think it's just dead in the water with the Recast. You know, let him die and let her get an Emmy out of it, and then let Joey Buchanan come back to town and sweep her off her feet.
And who would you put together then?
Well, I would – well, there's a tie. I'd put back Todd and Blair, and I'd put back Bo and Nora. I think those are the shows probably they're – you know, those are the Mac and Rachels. Those are the ones that could carry this show forward and then, you know, start a new generation. I don't think it would work with Clint and Vicky at this point because it's a recast, and I really like Vicky with Charlie. But I'd put Bo and Nora back together, and I'd put Todd and Blair back together.
I would take and break up Marty and Todd before it even starts. I would break up Nora and Clint, and putting back together, as much as I dislike Blair and Todd in the context of they tell the same story over and over and over, you guys are right. These two need to be back together as a couple because it just works so much better. We've talked a lot about writing and we're running a bit long. So I'm going to go on to a couple of the other things that we normally discuss, which would be production and the new media opportunities. What do you guys think of the production of One Life to Live, and how would you improve the show through its production? Jamie?
Well, Luke, you know how I feel about these things. Productions, it looks fine. It's a soap. It looks fine. I would rather spend 3 hours talking about character and story than production, so I think the show looks fine. So go to someone else.
Okay, Tina?
Back in the day, One Life to Live used to have a lot of big galas, and they used to dress up. They had big parties at Landfair and at Ace's Mansion, and even though they were the poor soap, they always seemed to have time for some glitz and some glamour, and not quite, you know, the Go Red Ball was okay, but it's not quite as glitzy as it used to be. Maybe a little bit more glitz. Other than that, you know, Jamie's right. It looks like a soap. It's fine.
Nelson, any thoughts?
It's the most perfect looking produced show on daytime television, I think. There you get A+ on that.
And I hadn't thought of the big events, but you know what, Tina, you're right. Because the moment you mentioned that, all I could think was Nurse's Ball on General Hospital. And there's nothing that pisses me off more about General Hospital is the fact that we'll have these awful sweep stunts where everything explodes, but we can't have the Nurse's Ball. Because apparently it takes too much work. I guess in wrapping this up for our final topic, I want to talk about the teen set because we discuss it in Days. They have a large teen set, but Star as a character is so core to the teen set, and now we have Langston and her boyfriend whose name all of a sudden slips my mind, and then you
Marco.
Have Marco. There we go. What
you mean, Geraldo Rivera?
Geraldo. Rivera. That was hilarious. Yeah. How do you improve One Life to Live through its teen set? Tina?
Contrary to popular belief, I almost think there need to be a couple of more because you need to build on this teen set for the future rather than bringing in all bunches of new faces in a couple of years. Some of these people, you know, they need to grow up. We need to see them on screen to have some sort of connection to them.
Or who would you reintroduce? Would you ask Matthew to be their age? Would you take and bring in someone else's children?
You could bring back CJ with Sarah on the canvas and Tina on the canvas and Cord on and off. I mean, CJ is a glaring omission. In fact, bringing back CJ, you can almost make him gay. In fact, some people think he is. So
I know a lot of almost gay people.
No, it just that he was having those tendencies when he left. I mean, he could come back, you know, completely out of the closet.
Did he like IKEA?
Now, a lot of people shop at IKEA. Just because you shop at IKEA does not make you gay, Jamie.
And Ellen Wheeler, like, the guiding light sets are built by IKEA.
Wow.
Okay.
Going back to what I was saying, CJ is someone who definitely needs to be on screen. I think Joey needs to come back. Maybe
isn't he too old?
I was going to say, Adrian France has been playing teen storylines for 20 years.
I know, but didn't he bang Dorian like 20 years ago himself? No. To bring him back as the age of her grandchildren would just be a little bit weird, wouldn't it?
No, that was only like 10 years ago. So, I mean, he can be a little bit older than them, not necessarily playing on that teen scene, but you could bring back Max and his children.
Well, wasn't Nora's daughter pregnant before she was carted off, or am I wrong on that?
Yes, I believe she was. So she could come back with a child.
Well, the child could come back, but the mother wouldn't necessarily have to, but the child could come back.
But there are, if you go look throughout the little annals of One Life to Live history, there are children that can return to the canvas, people that can come back on screen that have ties to the show. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't bring in one or two newbies, but you need to build a little bit on that 18 to 21 group so that 3 or 4 years from now, you recognize your 20-somethings.
Would you take and bring back the Britney character as a foe for Star?
Oh, I don't even know why they let her go.
Okay. Nelson, how do you improve One Life to Live through its teen set?
I think the teen set's pretty, you know, it's fine. I tune into One Life to Live to see. I think they have one of the most realistic teen sets on daytime, so it's fine. It's perfect. I'm more concerned about the veterans on the show. I would bring CJ back. I think, you know, like Tina said, that's a glaring omission, and they should be ashamed of themselves for not bringing in, you know, the goddamn Buchanan and a Lord. I mean, Tina and Cord merged the Lord and Buchanan families, you know. And I would bring back Joey, even though he's, you know, I'd bring him as a Daniel Cosgrove, like in the 30s. He can fall in love with a teenager, you know, like a Marcy Ryland.
Well,
I want to be Sarah Roberts so badly.
If Nikki had her way on the podcast, you could very much do a Dusty Lucy As the World Turns type storyline with a Joey character.
Yeah, I always thought Joey was gay. I'd probably make Joey gay because, you know, he was a minister and he fell in love with the biggest drag queen in the world, Dorian. So I would make CJ straight. But I don't trust them casting, you know, Tina's children. The only Tina in my life right now is the one on this podcast.
Thank you.
I think it's fine. You know, I would make Star. I would have her give like giving her baby up to Marcy and her relationship with her dad. And losing Cole. I would just make her evil, like the old Star. And then you have your villain. And I think it's fine. Yeah, maybe you could have one. You know, I would probably listen. Dan Vickers is the biggest whore in daytime. Surely he has a child. And if he's a Buchanan, have like this great little mini David show up and looking for his father, and you know maybe he finds out that his father is actually a real Buchanan before David does, and you know I think David surely must have some children out there. Maybe he had one with Tina. Maybe Tina was gone. Tina's been gone for 10 years. She surely could have given birth.
Jamie, how do you improve One Life to Live through its teen set?
Well, I think they have to fast forward beyond what's going on right now. Star has to get a new love interest. I think that Star needs to go to college. I think they need to move him to college. I think Star needs to struggle with the fact that she's given up her baby. I hope that they keep the baby. I don't know. I haven't read any spoilers. I do hope that they let Marcy adopt it because that's real life, and that gives you great storyline down the pike when this kid wants to come back and, you know, confront Star. But I think they should have Star go to college, try to join a sorority, and then have a mean girl reveal that she'd given birth to a baby, let that cause problems for her. You know, maybe even have her try to have a new love interest with Cole at the same school, with them having some longing and angst between them. And, you know, they need to bring back a Brittany-type character, if not Brittany. And Cole needs to be screwing her. And Star and him need to be separated by that angst and the pathos of that. And there needs to be less scenes of her screeching and yelling and all that. That's just, what's the point?
Here's a question that may stump you, and this might be a first time. Is there any young actors that we've seen on another soap that would work really well opposite of Star in that age group that you would recommend?
Let's see. I'm thinking 19 to 20s, you know, which someone 22 could play it. Let me think right quick on some of the other shows. I mean, the guy that played one of the victims of the GH serial killer thing could play like an older frat guy that falls for Star, you know, or that wants her to tutor him. What am I thinking? What's his name? The one that was dating Maxie for a while.
Jason Gerhardt.
Yeah. I mean, bring on someone like him. Or
they could get Blake Barris.
Yeah. I mean, God, nobody is using Blake at all. I mean, he'd be great for CJ. Blake Barris.
Well, then he'd have to be gay.
He needs to leave Days of Our Lives like yesterday, but we're not talking about Days. So, yeah, Blake Barris would work. While we're talking about Days, somebody could rescue the poor kid playing Max. He's too good for Days right now.
This is ABC, so they only want CBS stars.
No, right. So, okay, let's think. CBS. CBS hadn't had any young people in years, but
the only one you could possibly do is be the actor who played Thomas.
Well, since you didn't get your wish about Will Munson being the new Michael yet, I mean, why not bring him over to, you know, Red Rover, CBS ABC edition. I mean, they can keep it up. I mean,
Eric William Morris is good. He's a little too old for Star, but I would recommend maybe as.
I mean, they just need. It needs to be. I think it needs to be organic. I think Star needs to be working at her college newspaper because she's a Buchanan. I think, you know, she needs to be work. I mean, not a Buchanan. She's a Lord. She needs to get a job at the school webzine, and the scholarship kid who's working there is like, oh yeah, you're a freaking Lord. That's why you're in this class, or that's why you got your scholarship. I mean, you know, there needs to be that conflict where she really wants to be a journalist, but this, you know, scholarship Latino kid or black kid or anybody is like resenting her because she's an heiress. I mean, instead of just all this plotty stuff with, you know, let's see what Todd can do to now to steal her baby and put it in a tree like Lumina on Another World. I mean, One Life to Live is very plotty and cartoonish right now to me when it comes to a lot of its storylines.
Well, you just reminded me. One Life to Live has the best younger actor in daytime, I think, and that's Eddie Alderson. And I think that boy, he steals my heart every time he's on the screen, and he's fierce actor, fierce. And
I would not do that.
He has that Kristen Alderson thing and Kimberly McCall thing where you can age him. He's not aging as fast as I'd liked him to be. And I also think we're going to lose him to Hollywood. I mean, the guy's amazing. He's been he was just an Angelina Jolie film. So he and Star, you know, had a flirtation, or he had a crush on Star. So I mean,
that would be hard in the long haul, though.
Yeah, for sure. But I would use him a lot more. I mean, he's not being used as much. I think he's an option.
I want to pose a question that Jay made me think of as a final topic. Do you think that soaps underplay the role of spoiled rich heirs versus the up-and-coming trying to achieve characters? Because when you mentioned that about Star, I got to thinking, it's like, when's the last time you've really seen someone be resentful of the fact that, at that age or in the college age where it's, I'm a poor kid, I'm trying to do this, and you're just a rich kid. That was a little bit different. That was a romance. I was just meaning as like a rivals or as whatever the case is. You don't see that as much anymore, and that used to sort of be a staple. It was sort of an us versus them amongst those characters.
Well, you kind of had that a little bit there with Nash. They were kind of playing that there for a while, and it was a note that worked. And considering they have, you know, this is supposed to be a show about disparity in the haves and the have-nots, you would think it would be a recurring theme. in some of these storylines, and it never.
But why
is.
Aren't the Vegas? Why don't the Vegas have a bigger chip on their shoulder?
Because they had money up until recently.
And see, I'm not saying that there should be like an. Yeah, I don't think that there should just like that. Carlotta should just throw hash in Vicky's face when she walks in the diner.
No, I'm not saying that. I guess I was just meaning more for the younger characters because I know there was. I mean, that's part of the story behind.
Well, there are no younger Vegas. They're in their 40s. The boys.
No, there's Jamie. She's still too little. I mean, she'd have to be.
Yeah, forget about her.
Well, that's the thing. Spencer, now I'm calling him Spencer. Shane, I mean, he lives in a goddamn motel on a highway, like in Texas. And you would never know. This kid should be traumatized by the wealth he's encountered. And you should make him Eddie Alderson's friend. And you could play that between those two characters.
Well,
You know, Matthew's older, but you could still do that. And I just think he really needs to anchor Gigi. You know, on the you know the edge of land view society, and Dexter Truman, Shane Marasco can meet people in school too. I mean, they need to invest in these kids. Kristen's still 16, I guess. Brandon Buddy's like 25, but you know they're kind of aging into that adulthood in the next 2 years. So they need Austin Williams is a great opportunity for them to invest in the new teen set.
Their biggest problem is that they got a lot of guys, because even Star's younger brother, Jack, they're going to be bringing him upward, too. I mean...
Oh, I love Jack.
You know...
He's like the old Star.
Right, and then you're going to... You can even have something between him and, say, Matthew, and it's the Buchanan versus Mannings, which seems to be also a recurring theme. But you're going to need to bring some girls into this picture, too.
So, wrapping up this episode, any final thoughts? Jamie?
Okay. I have to say, because I don't want to seem like this was all totally negative, One Life to Live has been one of the best written soaps in the last couple of years, and I applaud Ron Carlovati for that. I have to admit my bias that I've never really connected to the show. I watch all soaps, but it's just never been my cup of tea. So that I do have to admit that colors a lot of my – I mean, if I wasn't doing a soap blog, I probably wouldn't watch regularly. I'd still tune in. But, you know, it takes a lot for me to really be engaged by the show anyway. But when I am really engaged, it is like those really powerful character-driven moments like Bo dealing with his father's death and things like that. He's got to tone down the 80s campy stuff. I'm a fan of that kind of stuff, but it doesn't fit on this show. I would expect it on Days. I'd expect it on Passions, but it just seems glaring on a show that deals with Vicky's heart problems and socioeconomics and things like that, that we have these Mendoras and these lightning strikes that take you back in time. I know a lot of people liked them, but none of that worked for me. 1968 would have been great if it was 2 days, but... It was just a big old mess to me, and I thought it was a waste of time, and I don't see why we had to lose Forbes March for all of this.
Nelson, what are your thoughts wrapping up the topic of how to improve One Life to Live?
I think, you know, I agree with Jamie, and maybe this podcast is a little negative. However, having said that, you know, I do think it's in major trouble, and if I were Ron, I would watch a week's worth of One Life to Live from last fall and watch a week's worth from this fall. And I think he'll see what he needs to do. I think it's pretty obvious.
To be fair, though, it's not in the kind of trouble that Days of Our Lives or Guiding Light is in.
Well, no, of course not. And that's not saying that. But it's in trouble artistically because it was so perfect, you know, before the writer's strike, and it was really – he was just getting his mojo on and – it made sense, and it was like this Broadway play on daytime, and it was so beautiful to watch. And now I see him sort of doing these rating stunt sweep storylines that is not in his, you know, he's much more talented than that, and that's not one I suppose personally.
And the only reason Days is in any more trouble than any of the other shows is because its network has thrown it to the wolves. I mean, its ratings are right on par with One Life to Live and everything else, so that's the only reason it's in any more trouble. I don't think that any of the soaps are that much greater than the rest of them.
Well, YNR is the only soap that I think is worth watching right now, and I think One Life to Live you know, I'm really worried about it. I really am. I don't think it's in, you know...
I think they all need to watch As right the now. World Turns. I like Y&R, but it's still got a lot of growing. But As the World Turns has been the most consistent good soap in for a long time. The last 6 months, at least.
I don't know about that. I think it's really inconsistent. It has, like, split personality. It's either really good or really bad. But
and that will be the As the World Turns episode, which we're also going to be recording this week, hopefully. Tina, what are your final thoughts on this episode?
Well, you know, One Life to Live has always had that touch of camp. I think it's kind of gone overboard in part because I think maybe Ron wanted to show how in touch he was with the history of the show that he kind of went digging around and started, you know, popping up all these historic-y type storylines, and I think he kind of went a little overboard. I think the 40th anniversary kind of ended up force-feeding more of it down all our throats. But now, you know, he's past the strike, he's past the 40th anniversary. Now he needs to get back to better timing, better writing. I think he's very capable of truly making the show one of the best shows on daytime. But he's gone up and down, and you know what? I guess all writers do that at various points in time. You know, they have these moments of brilliance that, you know, I guess we have to learn to live with. But if they don't all get their acts together pretty soon, we're not going to have anything left to talk about on any network.
Yeah, can I just say one thing? I love Ron Carlovati. I think everyone knows that I'm probably his first big fan. And I think he's really needed in this industry, and I'm sure he can turn the show around. And there's a lot of things that he's not, that you can't blame him for. You know, he faced the writer's strike, Gary Tomlin, you know, who took over as a FICOR writer, and as far as I'm concerned, that's stabbing, passive-aggressive stabbing. I don't respect that at all. He, you know, burdened the show with Star getting pregnant, almost cost Ron, you know, his job. Several ABC people have told me that because Brian Fonz loved the marketability of the Star pregnancy storyline, which I just think is a ripoff from the Britney Spears sister thing, whatever her name is, scandal. So he's had a lot to deal with, and then he also had the 40th anniversary, God, opus. I mean, it was just sort of endless, and the buildup was sort of anticlimactic. So I'm interested to see what he's going to do now. I'm not impressed with what I'm hearing. So I think he's been, you know, everything hasn't really been his fault. And so I think he needs to get back to his roots. And I feel like he's trying to make up for lost time. He's been burdened with storylines that he didn't create. So ironically, I think he's writing the Star Todd thing not so badly, actually, considering it wasn't his idea. So, you know, I do feel for him and stuff. You know, when he said he was turning 40 this year, the same age as One Life to Live, I thought that was kind of a beautiful, poetic thing, a coincidence. But, you know, it's not all about you, Ron. You know, and he needs to lay off the father-son stuff because, you know, women watch daytime and maybe, you know, and I think women and the mothers and daughters have much more complex relationships, I think. Yeah, so I want to defend him, and I think he's doing great work, and it's not the worst show. I'm just really worried about the trajectory of the show right now.
And I think I would have to agree. I mean, I think that the past year on this show, as I said, if you take it from Ace's death to the 40th anniversary episodes, there's very little to complain about. And so now that we're past that point and we're starting to see other stuff that is concerning us, it's making those things stand out even that much more because of how good the past year was on it. But I think that One Life to Live can benefit from the exact same things that some of these other soaps can benefit from. Rivalries need to return. Romance needs to return. Crap like Todd and Marty doesn't cut it. It just doesn't cut it. This is something that you would expect to have seen on Passions. I think that they have tons and tons of potential, but it needs to streamline and strengthen itself rather than going in tons of directions and making and wearing itself thin. And I think that's what's starting to happen. I think that it's got too much going at once. On that note, we would encourage you to send your comments to podcast@daytimeconfidential.com. Drop by the forums, forums.tvfanonline.com, and visit daytimeconfidential.com. Nelson, it's always a pleasure visiting with you.
Ditto. Thank you, guys.
And Tina, I'm glad you were able to make it for this episode.
So was I.
It's always wonderful to get your perspective on this show since you have so much history with it. Jamie?
Yes.
As the newest One Life to Live fan among us, or who's, I should say, watching it consistently for the shortest amount of time, it's great to have your thoughts on it.
What'd you say? I was busy packing my Louis Vuitton because I'm off to go look for my Asian daddy.
Well, maybe all of us need to find our inner Asian.
Well, I'm not touching that one.
Okay. On that note, we thank you for listening. Until next time, so long, folks.
Top 10 ways to improve One Life to Live. I can only think of a couple. Right now, we're right in the middle of the 1968 storyline, which has gone from cute to worse. Maybe by the time this podcast airs, the whole thing will be resolved, but I'm really scared about the direction it's taking, especially since they pulled Gigi into it, and she sees Emma, and she is Emma, and it just really doesn't make any sense. But the only way that I can think of to really, really improve One Life to Live is something that's been sorely missing, and that's the Gannons. You need RJ. You need Hank. This show has a black family that they can use, and they've made some really, really bonehead decisions about when and where to use this family over the course of, you know, their tenure. So this show has needed Hank for, I don't know, 2-3 years. And the way that RJ left with that letter just made no sense. So definitely bring the Gannons back, not just because they're black, but, you know, just the show does need diversity. But they're maybe not a core family, but I will put them as a very, very important, almost second tier family to One Life to Live. We need the Gannons back. We need Rachel. We need RJ. We need Hank. And if they could find a way to get Carrie back in there, I would love that. So that's all I got. I can't think of anything else. Otherwise, the show's going great. Glad the Mindora thing is over, but they really need to make this whole 1968 thing make sense.
Yes. My name is Dre, Gifted Child. First off, I want to thank Daytime Confidential for bringing so much interesting topics and giving their thoughts and views as far as daytime soaps. The top 10 ways to improve One Life to Live that I feel is good ways to improve One Life to Live. We need to go back to the dynamics as far as the core family, the Lords, the Buchanans, the Kramers, and even the Wolegs. Where is the Wolegs? Where is Larry Woleg and his son Danny Woleg, who Danny Woleg is a nephew of Vicky Victoria Lord? And let's bring back some diversity back to the fold. Let's bring back the Gannons, Hank, RJ, Rachel Gannon. It would be nice to see them again interacting. Also, it would be nice to see if we can have more social issues, more love in daytime in the afternoon, you know, love in the afternoon. Let's also have Vicky dress like a lord again. Do you remember when Vicky used to dress like a lord? Remember her back in the 80s, early 90s? And speaking of lords, it would be nice to see her working back at the paper, and it would be nice, in my opinion, to even see Victor Lord come back from the dead. I know it may sound crazy to think about it. This will be the first time in a long time since Todd, Vicky, Tina, his children, all together. And you also have Dorian Lord, the one that he married. It would be nice to see him back from the dead and mingling and dealing with those people, because he has so much storylines and so much issues and history with each and every one of them. It'll be interesting to see how they react to that. Also, let's even have a little clip where even Erica Kane can come to One Life to Live. Give Dorian a battle or run for the money, even if Adam can come with Erica. That would be nice. Let's bring back the suspense and adventure. One Life to Live is a great show right now because of Frank Valentini and Ron Carlovalti. But the storylines is good, but our attention span is short, and we do not need to drag on the storylines the way that we do on One Life to Live. Also, it would be nice to see Gabrielle back. It would also nice to see, if Victor Lord was back, it would nice to see how Todd interacts with all that anger he has inside of him, rebuilt from that history. And maybe if Blair could be part of that. Bring back the feistiness and Star. Give Dorian a love interest. Let's have Larry Wolek back into the fold. Make Gigi a Wolek, if it's possible. One Life to Live is a good show. And I'm wishing y'all much luck and even an outstanding daytime Emmy for 2009. Also, last but not least, let's bring Bo back to leading actor status like he was. He could take a powerful storyline and run with it. Thank you, Daytime Confidential. This is Dre, Give the Child.
Yes, hi. I'm calling to leave a message on the 10 ways to improve the One Life to Live show. I think it needs to start with rehauling all the behind-the-scenes people, like starting down from the writing. I think they need more diverse writers to reflect the diversity that's in 2008. And from there, they need to rehire more diverse actors and actresses and make sure they have lead stories to tell, not just hire them as background, but hire them to have lead stories to tell. On that note, I think they should rehire Renee Goldsberry, Timothy Stickney. These are proven, fine minority actors who could actually carry stories and had the fans behind them to prove that. They also need to tell, even include more of the Vegas other than the stereotypical ways that they show them as hot, angry Latino men all the time. They can tell more stories with them. I think the key in this is that they need to hire some people that knows how to write for a diverse cast and start hiring that diversity. They also need to stop retelling stories. We've seen all these stories, and they keep repeating them, and it gets tiring. They need to hire more younger. If they need to hire more younger writers to bring something fresh and new to the show, they should do that. Maybe start a writer's workshop for soaps, and out of that comes more young, new, diverse writers who are willing to take a chance on something new for daytime. Otherwise, it's going to die. That's just my opinion. I know that's probably not 10, but I think if they start somewhere with that, it should get a little bit better. Thank you.
The first one would be a change in regime, since they don't really seem to be in touch with what the audience wants. Number two, since most likely they're not going to do that, is stop insulting the viewers and underestimating our intelligence. The 40th anniversary was just a slap in the face to anyone who's familiar with One Life to Live. I mean, it just was awful. I couldn't even watch it. For one, the Buchanans did not exist in 1968. Why were we in some hick town in Texas? But moving on, they need to go back to focusing on what Agnes Nixon wanted for One Life to Live, which was to be different from the other soaps. She wanted something that showed diversity and social economic differences and just a little bit of taste of reality, something that you could sink your teeth in, not this over the just this camp we're getting now. It just makes no sense. Stop ripping off the 80s. I mean, it just, the current storylines are just ridiculous. The guy is recycling stuff that already happened. Show some originality. Number five, let's see, I think they need to be true to the characters, be consistent to what the characters would actually do, give them their own voice and their own mind. Don't use characters to prop and pimp other characters, which seems to be something that One Life to Live likes to fall back on constantly. Stop wasting Michael Easton. John McBain should just be fixed once and for all. I mean, really, they just need to fix him, and they can do it if they choose to. Malone was a great writer, and he actually could write for McBain, so maybe they need to bring him back. My biggest peeve, the one I really want, bring back Renee Elise Goldsberry. She had the most potential to be the biggest daytime superstar and was completely wasted on that show. That's just ridiculous. Those are just a few of my suggestions. I really hope they look into doing something, because I'm at this rate, I'm afraid that the show just might get canceled because viewers are not happy.
I think the biggest way they can improve One Life to Live is to use Nora more. Not necessarily with Clint, but maybe get back together with Beau. And additionally, I think John needs to lighten up a bit and maybe get back together with Natalie, because Natalie and Jarrett just do not work. They may be hot, but they're going to fizzle out. Hope this helps. There's other ways. I definitely get rid of Adriana. She's the most boringest character on there, and I know she's coming back, but oh god. And Antonio and that whole Mendora thing was just stupid. Love Tina and Cord, but want more. Want more of Vicky, want more of Jessica / Tess, and maybe have Nash come back as a different person. I don't know. They need to get Forbes March back. Hope this helps. Thanks. This is Carol in California.
Top 10 ways to improve One Life to Live. Stop bringing back dead characters. Number 2, couples. They have great couples. They need to actually do something with them. My favorite couple is Jared and Natalie, but for the last 2 months, Jared and Natalie have been dumbed down so that Tessica can act like a freaky-ass clown. Number 3, fire Brandon Buddy, fire Justice Bolding. Number 4, get Ron Carlotti a co-head writer because he seems to have lost his mojo. Number 5, actually that's it. Those 4, that's all. Bye.
This message is for the subject of the top 10 ways to improve One Life to Live. I've been watching it for about 15 years, and it's just right now it desperately needs improvement. I think the biggest thing that needs improvement is you got to return the whole love in the afternoon aspect. Focus on couples that people really love, Jared and Natalie, Vicky and Charlie, you know, Dorian and hopefully David if he ever comes back. You got to focus on these couples that people really, really like, and give them storylines about their relationships instead of the stuff that's on now. The second thing you got to do is tone down Gigi and Rex big time. I really liked Gigi and Rex, but I never realized that I only liked them when they were in small doses. You put Gigi and Rex on 5 times a day, and they become extremely annoying. The other thing you got to do is get rid of Tess. She is eating the show. She is not a fan favorite. People don't like her. I don't like her. If you read the boards, people just want her gone. She's too cartoonish, and her little quest for revenge on Jared and Natalie is just completely ridiculous. The other thing you got to do is take that little pinning Nash's desk off of Jared's back. It really wasn't his fault. Another thing you got to do is get rid of the Todd, John, Blair, Todd, and Marty triangle or quad. Nobody likes it. I'm sorry. There's nothing cute about Todd and Marty, you know, him being her rapist, bonding, and John is just a dog, so John and any woman is just disgusting. Another thing you got to do is the teen stuff. It's a little heavy-handed. Todd is a fan favorite, and I think writing him like a complete psycho is a huge mistake. Huge mistake. So I think those are the things that you got to fix in order to improve One nice to live. And again, the biggest thing I think you need to do is bring back love in the afternoon. Nobody wants to see Jared and Natalie suffering at the hands of a maniac alter personality that is just really, really stupid. We love Jared and Natalie. We adore them, and we want them to have a storyline of their own that doesn't revolve around getting locked in Ethan's.